Welcome to the Walking Through Time podcasts. There are plenty more to make your visit to New Norfolk more enjoyable.
Well, when I was a young teacher, I was appointed to the school at the institution, which in those days was called Royal Derwent, but we now know it as Willow Court. And I went to the school on the first morning, and there were about 16 children attending school. But as I got to know my way around the hospital, I found that there were children all over the institution, none of whom were getting any education. So I went to the then medical superintendent, Dr. Weatherley, and said, look, I'm not very happy that I'm only working with a few children. I really should be working with all the children. And of course, I didn't understand the politics behind all this. He was delighted and said, oh, well, we'll help you in any way we can. So I started running what effectively was sessional school, because I couldn't obviously take all the children at once and I didn't have the staff. So we proceeded to do that, and children came from the children's ward, and they also came from boys' ward, and there were others in different parts of the hospital. So we ended up with over 100 children at school attending on sessional basis, many of them, especially the younger and the older ones. Now, by about April, I was fairly frustrated that I couldn't get any support from the education department. They were paying my salary, and they expected me to just do what I had to do and not bother them. So I couldn't get any equipment, and I couldn't get an extra teacher. Reform, you take two steps forward and six steps back. And I just happened to be there. I was only there for a year, and I just happened to be there at a time when I thought, hey, only a small number of children attending is wrong. And so we raised awareness. The hospital were delighted to get the children out of the wards. And that's where I didn't understand the conflict between the education department and the health department. Because while the children were in the wards, nursing staff had to look after them. When they went to school, of course, education teachers looked after them, and the education department had to pay. So there were some changes, although, and there was a lot of reform, and finally the institution was closed, and people, children and others, have the opportunity to live in the community. And so, yes, there were huge changes. But I must admit, when I took a position, I mean, I left the school, I went overseas, I travelled, I had a totally different life for over 30 years. When I went back, I was rather amused that at one of my early meetings I went to, the debate was between the education department and the health department about who should pay for what in terms of children and their transition from school to out into the community. And I thought, oh dear, all those years away, but the fundamental battles, bureaucratic battles about responsibility have only changed marginally. So for me as a young teacher, if I wanted new shelving or renovation of a hall for the woodwork classes, it just happened because there was a whole workforce in the institution in those days. And when we put on a concert, again, it just all happened because there were so many people around to organise. So years later, when I went back into a school where you had to sort of requisition for that kind of assistance, I used to look back to my Royal Derwent days and say, well, it was a community within a community. And I was fortunate to have the total support of the then medical superintendent. But there are some interesting highlights of that era, the from today, today's perspective would sound quite bizarre and suggest that I took enormous risks. For example, one of the things that I still think of is after teaching, I was responsible for the older boys' class as well as, you know, managing the school, but I taught them, you know, reading, writing and arithmetic. And I used the old Truth newspaper to get them interested, because these were kids who were either had intellectual disability or some of them were actually young offenders who were considered of such low intelligence that they were better seen to be better off in the institution than one of the other centres. And there wasn't a juvenile detention centre at that time. So these young men, you know, I come along and say that they've got to learn to read and write. And the only way I could do it was to let them read the Truth, because it was full of, you know, it was full of crime statistics and sport, and that interested them. So it was amazing how quickly, and some of them had had basic reading as younger children, and being encouraged to learn to read by cutting out the headlines of what they wanted to read and writing it, etc., etc. That was one of the unorthodox methods that the then inspector was not sure of when I showed him these big books that the boys had made for their reading materials. But another thing that people can't quite believe was we went on, we used to go on outings, we'd go out into the community. And, of course, in those days, that was just seen as unheard of to take, to go outside. You had to get your big key to actually unlock to get out of the place. So it was a very different world, and a very, by today's standards, there was a lot of appalling treatment of people, and the children were included in that. But on the other hand, there was the freedom to do things that you wouldn't get away with today. For example, around the time of preparing for the school concert, we needed a Christmas tree. And so I just went to the works department and said I wanted to borrow an axe. Why did I want to borrow an axe? Well, I was taking my boys, my big boys' class, and remember, I wasn't that much older than many of them. I was taking my boys up the bush to chop down a tree for the concert. And no one questioned that. I mean, I didn't have to get permission from anyone except the person who gave me the axe. And I signed for the axe, and I put the axe over my shoulder, and off I went. Got to the school, one of the boys offered to carry the axe, and off we went up the bush and chopped down the tree and safely came back again. Now, you know, anyone hearing that story today, what was I then? I'd have been probably 20, 21. Anyone hearing that story today would say she was absolutely mad taking kids. Most of the kids were there for petty offences. They weren't there for violence, but even so, they were free to there were about 15 of them and me, and you know, and an axe. I mean, people would say, how could she be so naive? But I think that was the difference in the environment, that you felt perfectly safe within the institution. So if you took your chances of moving out of the institution with those kids, you still felt perfectly safe, and I was perfectly safe, as it turned out. Though I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to young teachers today. And today, of course, you know, it couldn't happen because there are so many checks and balances. And I sometimes think, you know, we've lost a lot of trust by being so cautious and risk averse. But, you know, in retrospect, it could have ended unhappily.
The Walking Through Time Project has been made possible through the assistance of the Australian Government's Your Community Heritage Program and funding from the Derwent Valley Council. We would like to thank the many members of the public who have given freely of their thoughts and memories to make this project a success. Thank you.